each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey everybody, and welcome. Summer has officially arrived.
Yes, it's back.
It is back. Because we say that because last week was like autumn. It was beautiful. Last week was beautiful. And this week will be nice because we know that it's coming soon. It's a temporal thing. Hard to believe that today is the last day of August. Unbelievable. The summer. You look so forward to the summer and then it comes and then you blink your eye and it's gone. And that's the way life is, isn't it?
It is.
That's what the scripture says.
But at least I don't have to go back to school. For that, I'm grateful. Yeah, me too.
And
yes.
I agree. We have to count our blessings. That's right. But we're not complaining, really.
We're thankful.
But that, boy, I'll tell you, seems like July was June, whatever. Mm-hmm. Where did it go? Welcome. How was your weekend? Christina, Geraldine, Tony's on his way.
Tony's right. On his way. Yes.
Yeah. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm okay. Just trying to get used to starting up over at the Y today
because we started
the new session with that. And my girlfriend, she's having a hard day at work, just really busy today, but she's okay too. And we had a fun weekend. We went to the Bristol Renaissance Fair with some
friends. Yeah, how was it?
We had a lot of fun. It was Pirate Day, so Emily and I dressed up as that. And our friends James and Kimmy came along with us, and they dressed up too. So I'll show you pictures of that later.
Oh,
so
yeah, good.
We had a great time. We met my parents up for a little bit, so they got introduced to Emily a little bit.
Wow.
And also, we saw The Joust, a comedy show, Two Merry Men, and we ate a lot of the food and went shopping around, so we had a great time.
That's great. When you said, I'm not going to go there.
I know what you're thinking.
But everybody dressed up?
Yeah, we did.
You know, I thought about that over the weekend because I saw somebody dressed like something. I don't know what it was.
Well, it was Swashbuckling Day or Pirate Day over at the Bristol Renaissance Fair, so it was a lot of fun.
Well, this guy was dressed in all green.
Ooh,
or whatever. But it was a strange costume. I couldn't quite place him. I didn't know from...
It was an original, no doubt.
Yeah.
I think of some ideas about superheroes or fantasy or things like that or aliens, but just going by that, it would have to be where he was set up at, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we had a great time. We had a lot of fun. We had a great time.
Good. Good. I'm glad. Well, welcome back to back to reality now, mm-hmm. Nick. Back to reality. That was reality. Everything is reality, right? Anyway, and Geraldine, how was your weekend? I was so happy, you know, yesterday that we could, I don't know. Were you at the Mass?
Yes.
Yeah.
Find somebody older than I.
Exactly.
Yes, I know.
So, sister, I tried to, you know, and as I said, I don't know if you heard, because I kind of said it quietly, but I'm not a comic and I'm not a clown. But sister Natalia was with us yesterday. She had she's a Dominican sister and spoke about, because it was a mission Sunday, so she spoke about the mission in Siberia, of all places.
Cold.
Siberia. Minus 45 degrees most of the time, often in the winter. I can't even imagine.
No.
But anyway, she had mentioned, because we had in the church, we have the images of the saints,
mm-hmm.
and we've got they're all from Poland because the church, the parish, was founded by Polish immigrants. So we've got Saint Hedwig, Saint, I'm going to go in the order that they're Saint Hedwig, Saint Stanislaus Kostka, not Saint
Bishop
Stanislaus
and
Bishop and Martyr. St. Casimir, St. John Cantius, mm-hmm. St. Stanislaus Kostka, St. Andrew Bobola, and then the last three are Blessed Czesław, Saint Hyacinth, and Blessed Bronisława.
Mm-hmm.
And Bronisława and Czesław are brother and sister, and Saint Hyacinth is their cousin. So they were all members of the same family. And they were all, those three were Dominicans. So it was a nice way to introduce, I thought it was a very nice, clever way to introduce.
It was clever. Also, I'm glad that you mentioned St. Patrick being up there.
Exactly. You know, is
it, and maybe, I said, I've never seen him up there.
Did you catch that too?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So when I, as I mentioned to the people, because a lot of people don't, I said, I want to introduce you to these saints. And I named him, and then I mentioned St. Patrick when I saw St. Stanislaus, Bishop and Martyr, because people, when they come in the church, they often say, oh, they said, it's nice that you have St. Patrick.
He looks. You know?
And I said, well, that's not St. Patrick. That's St. Stanislaus, Bishop and Martyr. St. Patrick is from Ireland, and these are all Polish saints from Poland. And then, of course, as we have St. Dominic, actually St. Dominic in the stained glass window receiving the rosary from the Blessed Virgin Mary. And so
they probably confuse him with St. Patrick because there's green in his outfit.
Well, it's because St. Patrick, often if you see an image of St. Patrick, he's a bishop, so they will have the mitre and the crozier and all that. And so they look, but they do look similar, although St. Patrick has more green usually.
More green, yes.
More green.
Didn't he have a...
But what was that?
St. Patrick, did he have a beard? I don't remember.
I'm almost certain he does.
He had a beard.
I mean, they do. They look very similar. Mm-hmm. So, but then a lot of the saints do, because they've got that look of holiness.
Right.
But anyway, so Sister, she mentioned to us that St. Dominic, that the Dominicans are almost 800 years old. And so I took the opportunity to say, after she spoke, I said, well, now I understand. I can see now the difference between a woman and religious women and religious sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Women don't want you to know their age. But, Sister, you were, it was amazing that you told us, you mentioned your age. I says, you look good for 800 years old. And I thought everybody would get it, but it seems like nobody got it. Nobody got it. Did you get it?
Yeah, I got it, yeah.
Or maybe they just...
I just didn't want to laugh.
Or maybe it's because I don't... exactly. Because I said, and I don't know, this is a... I tend to be very serious anyway.
Oh, you are.
So I'm not the... I did say, I'm not a comic. I'm not a comic. I'm not a clown. And so...
here to amuse you.
Just didn't go over too well, did it?
No, because people take you seriously.
They know, they know not...
And believe everything, yes.
Yeah. And Tony was up on the altar. That's why he didn't want to laugh.
Right. I think it's one of those things where you get it kind of later on, because you don't...
Perhaps.
Expect it.
Perhaps.
Because you're not a clown. Or you're not there.
I did ask if
you're not there to
anybody
entertain.
Quite understand what I was saying. And one person raised their hand. One person out of 3,000 people.
The multitudes.
The multitude. No, it would be nice, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it?
Anyway. But that was, by the way, it was nice to have Sister here. She's just, they're Dominican sisters. And as I said, their sisters work in Siberia, and they've been there since I think the year 2000. And but she and all the sisters from her community who have been here are just, there's a humility, and when I say humility, I mean a humility that conveys a confidence and a power, a power. It's a sacred power. It's not nothing of this, women. Liberation and what do they call it? Feminist. So many of the religious have gone that way,
and that's why they've died down. Dominicans have a lot of vocations, a lot of young women.
There's so many different communities of Dominicans, but this specific Dominican community, exactly. So it was very nice having her here with us, and she's actually because her group of sisters are in Justin, Illinois. But they've got the mother house, probably is in Rome, but they've got a provincial house or something in Kraków in Poland. And so the sisters from there were sent. Oh, these sisters are here to work with the Polish immigration here in Chicago. And the sisters they're all over the world. So they've got them in Siberia. But boy, she was telling about the conditions there. And you kind of know when you think of Siberia, you think of very, and it is. Very stark.
Mm-hmm.
So who would ever choose to live there? But it's that they were sent to the labor camps.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The labor camps. And so after having been there, You know, that's you know, you think about the mobility of people today, and yet we forget that, you know, we are privileged in many ways, and people from some countries, but there are people who can't, they don't have that freedom mm-hmm. for mobility because of their economic stature, you know. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that these people that were in labor camps, just because the war was over, you know, this was under the Soviet Union, so they were for all these decades stuck, you know, basically stuck there. And so that you develop a tradition, cultural, living kind of tradition there. So kind of, by the way. Kinda. So, Tony, thank you. Well, welcome, Tony, by the way. So you pointed out, because I'm always chiding myself for saying kind of, you know. But at least I don't say like, you know what I mean, but I say kind of. And that was in the
Scripture
reading. Yesterday. Yeah,
for yesterday.
Do you remember the sentence? I don't remember the sentence.
I knew you were going to ask that, yeah. And I was trying to remember
it.
Anyway. It's like kind of the first, it says kind of the first fruits of creation.
St. Paul. Yeah. It was the second reading. Yeah. Yeah. So it's okay now.
Yeah.
It's okay. I can.
It's in sacred scripture.
I can say kind of.
So I figure you wouldn't listen to us when
no,
we tell
never.
You sometimes, right. You know, it's okay.
Exactly.
But when it yelled out, right. out at me with the scriptures, I said I had.
That's
to
why you yelled it out, right? When you
kind of rushed through it.
Something very interesting I just read this morning, just now, actually, right before I came down. This gentleman, and I didn't read the full article. I just read the excerpt from the article, but this is from Esquire magazine. Now, how did I get to Esquire magazine? I didn't get to the magazine. I didn't go into the magazine, but the a Catholic magazine took this from Esquire because they thought it was very interesting. This author decided, an author, I'm sorry. An author decided to do an experiment to test the power of various uniforms. By the way, speaking of uniforms, what a tragedy. The sheriff.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Deputy in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It's just horrific.
What happened? I'm sorry.
He was putting gas in his car.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he finished filling his gas up, and somebody came up and just shot him execution style in the back of the head. He fell to the ground, and they kept shooting him.
Oh, that's terrible.
You know, so anyway, I don't want to go into all that, but it's just a really, really horrible. But because of the uniform.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the uniform. Mm. So this author did he wanted to do an experiment. So he wanted to test the power of various uniforms, and he bought four. The uniforms for looking. One was the a security guard, one was a mechanic, one was a doctor, and one was a Catholic priest. So he spent I don't know how many days, but he would spend the day walking through the city. I don't know if this is New York City. I believe it was. I saw the picture, so it might have been. It looked like it to me. It could have been New York. Could have been Chicago. They're twin cities in many ways, but I don't think this was Chicago. I think where's Esquire headquarters?
I don't know.
Anyway, the point is that he found that the hardest uniform to wear was that of a Catholic priest.
Mm-hmm. I believe that.
Yeah, he wore the cassock. He wore the full cassock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and. He said that, it's very interesting, he said it was the hardest one. He says people stared at him everywhere he went. He says everywhere he went, he was stared at. Let's see. People drew their eyes. They consciously made eye contact with him. They gave nods. They bowed a little bit. They stared. Openly, he said that it was respectfully and distantly, like there was a lot going through the head.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, he said when walking in pairs, men wind up, they're curiously listening to the bird out suddenly. Oh, good morning. He says, how many people said good morning, Father? The habit they would learn in high school. So he walked 23 blocks, and he said the world could not take its eyes off him as he was going north. This must have been in New York. He said the other thing, that was one thing. So the one thing was that people stared at him. He said it became like a tourist attraction, you know, because even as the, you know, there's a lot of tourism. This must be New York, because the picture certainly looked like it. And I, but it was, he said that the people from buses would take pictures of him, you know, tour buses and all that. You know, you got the double-decker and all that. He said the other thing that was interesting is people wanted to touch him. That was interesting. He says, when you wear a uniform, no one will touch you, but except the priest. A priest, people will touch a priest, usually on the wrist, in a very, in a rather modest way. He said it happened to him 12 times. Just as in the middle of a conversation, so he said it was something that was interesting to him. Sometimes people were hugging, the kneeling to speak to children, and leaning in for the selfies and all that. So he said it became like a tourist attraction. He also said homeless people especially reached out to him for help. I understand that clearly. Sure. Anybody in need. And he had to tell them he wasn't a priest, he said. Anyway, so he became part of the city tour. And his conclusion was that being a priest was the hardest. Wearing the uniform of the priest was the most demanding uniform to wear. It's easy to put on a cassock, but it's not easy to wear it at all. It's very interesting. I did, I don't know, when I was in Ireland, I did a tour, a seven-county tour of Ireland before the sabbatical, so that was probably about 2006. I think it might have been 2006 or 2007. So I went through seven counties in 7 days of Ireland. I spoke at different places, different churches, and then from there I was in London, and then from London I was in Sri Lanka, all the way to Sri Lanka. And I wore the cassock. Don't ask me why, but I wore it. I mean, I wear it. You know, I don't wear it as, I wear the Roman, I'm like I'm wearing the Roman collar, but I wore it, I traveled in it. I think the first time I traveled in the cassock, I wore the, because I was, it was very official, what I was doing was very official, and I had people I didn't know who were going to meet me, and I was there for a purpose, you know, to be in a mission. It was a missionary tour, I guess, or pilgrimage. And I was invited first to Ireland, and then from there, you know, to these other places. But it was all done at the same time. So it was probably 2 weeks. I was gone maybe 2 weeks. So I wore the cassock, and I concur with what he says. I thought it was extremely uncomfortable. It's comfortable wearing. It's no problem. But it was uncomfortable because you were always on, you know, in the airports and all that. But I had some very very interesting experiences, and so there isn't. I tell you, if you want to rest, you know, then if you want to be off, then that's one thing. And we do need time off. Jesus had to go to the mountains, into the wilderness, into the desert. Now that doesn't mean that I'm not a professional priest in the sense that I work from 9 to 5, you know, and then I'm off. That's not what I mean. You understand what I'm saying? It's just there's times when, like for instance, I take a walk. Sometimes you want to take a walk where you just want to be alone in your own thoughts and your own prayer and your own just watching. But during this time, I wore the cassock the whole time, and it was there's something. Anyway, I'll talk to you later. I've got something on the desk for him, so you can do work while we're on the radio. So anyway, it's Monday, but that's a long story. Anyway, so wherever I went. People, you know, being in the airport, for instance, I don't remember the specifics. I'm just thinking about this now, but I had how many people came up to me, and they would tell their life story or something. Some people were converts. Some people had left the church, which is it's a powerful way to minister. But I had an experience with Buddhist monks in Sri Lanka, the airport. It was very interesting. very interesting conversation. So if I hadn't been wearing the cassock, these things wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I had one. Well, I'm not going to go into all the details. So anyway, but that was, but it's very interesting. I thought that was very interesting. Very interesting. All right. So we'll take a break and come back. And very interesting. It's best to leave the church, to be honest, and leave the church if you don't believe. If you don't believe. Pope Benedict said that. It's very interesting. I want to bring that up because today in the gospel, Jesus is a prophet not accepted in his own hometown. So we'll look at that, and then also, well, we'll see where we go. Okay, it's Monday. All right, everybody, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listen, Support, and Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change invites you to join us in saying the Our Lady of the Shrine Ark of Mercy prayer, which you can find on our website at ststandschurch.org and click on the Adorations tab to Iconic Monstrance. We are saying this prayer for Father Anthony's healing from cancer, but that God's will be done. Our Lady of the Sign, the Ark of Mercy, rush to the aid of your children. Awaken Christendom from slumber. Render the people of God wholly possessed by Jesus, the divine mercy. Guide us to seek sanctuary in the Ark of your Immaculate Heart, alive and at one with the Most Holy Trinity. And draw down upon your children a new Pentecost to renew the face of the earth.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Newsflash! This just in, Winds of Change podcast can now be heard on your iPhone and Android phone. Download the TuneIn Radio app and search Winds of Change, and Winds of Change will be right there for your very ears. We now return you to Winds of Change.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us today on this Monday. Did I say hi to you, Tony? I guess we did. Yeah, right. Okay,
yeah.
So all right.
It's good enough.
We did, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's good
just
enough.
Like the
it's enough.
It's enough.
It's good. It's enough.
It's enough.
Pope Benedict said, this is a Pope. How did this get in the on the website today? I don't know, but this was August 28th, 2012. So I'm reading it thinking Pope Francis.
This is new.
You know, this is new. And for whatever reason, maybe because it does relate to the gospel today. But anyway, the Pope said, it's very interesting, you know, when you think about it. What do you think about this? He said, this is Pope Benedict, a truly humble Pope, very humble. His humility is people think Pope Francis is humble, that he's got a lot of humility. Pope Benedict, and this isn't to put down, I'm not trying to put down Pope Francis, but it's amazing how the world didn't recognize true humility. Pope Benedict, talk about humility. I saw him many, many times, and I've seen Francis. I was thinking about five times I've seen him. But Benedict, Pope Benedict, truly, truly a humble man.
And it's interesting you say that the world didn't recognize him, and it's true. I don't know if I've mentioned it before. There was an interview with an exorcist, and one of the demons, he was telling the reporter that one of the demons were saying that they couldn't stand the name of Pope Benedict because of his humility.
Because of his humility. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt about that. Because see, the thing about Pope Francis, he's the Pope, you know, and he'll be in, I keep saying Chicago. I said that, he'll be in Philadelphia, as if the Holy United States is Chicago. He'll be in Philadelphia in a couple of weeks. I don't know the exact dates, but this month, or next, well, tomorrow is September, in September. And, you know, from the very beginning, they said Pope Benedict, the media loves him. Well, who doesn't? And we all love the Pope. I guess we should love everybody, right? That's a commandment of God, right?
Even our enemies.
Exactly. But Pope Francis, when he, the first couple of weeks of his papacy, he was doing all kinds of things that made me, and as he was doing this, you know, the media was going wild with his humility. I mean, look at the humility of this Pope. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't see it quite. Well, let me just say it. I just say it's more arrogant than it's not I don't see this as humility. I see this as a soft dose of arrogance. Forgive me for saying that, but and I explained that too. You know, I don't think I've said this before on the radio, but when he decided right out that he wasn't going to be in the papal apartments, I thought, well, you know, see, when I was a seminarian, we were part of our training was when you go into a new assignment, you don't immediately make these jolting changes. Mm-hmm. If changes needed to happen, let it happen, but give it some time. You know, we're talking good change, because there has to be great sensitivity to the people you're there to serve. You know, you're there to serve, and so Pope Benedict. So, for whatever his reasons for changing, deciding not to live in the papal apartment, which just fed the popular narrative that this is opulent and, you know, the Pope lives like a king and all that. No, the papal apartment is a very simple apartment. It's a very simple. I mean, Pope John Paul II, when he died, he had nothing.
Yeah.
He had nothing to will to anybody. He just had some books. And the point is, the whole Vatican is huge. I mean, it's big, but the Pope. His residents are opulent. They're not opulent. They're not.
Mm-mm.
It's very simple. Mm-hmm. Very simple. But the other thing is, that's a tradition. It's tradition. Not that it goes back. You know, I don't know when the popes began to live in that apartment. But the point is, not only is it tradition, but it's also symbolic.
Yes.
Because people, when you go to the piazza of St. Peter, everybody can point out, there's the papal apartment, because you've got a view to the window of the papal apartment. And I think of when Pope John Paul II was dying, the whole world, in a sense, could keep vigil, because they had eye view to the apartment where the Holy Father was dying, and they were there, thousands. I mean, it was more than 250,000, because the square itself feels that you can put 250,000 people in the square, but the people, they were all down Conciliazione, which is the street that goes into the Vatican. It was just a mass of people keeping vigil with an eye view to the papal apartment. And I remember, even as I would walk every day, I'd walk by the papal across, every time I'm in Rome, I make it a point every day I pass through St. Peter's Square. So my apartment, actually, when I was in sabbatical, was just a couple of blocks to the north of St. Peter's. And so every how many times a day did I pass through that square? Even going to school, I had to pass through the square. And it was always, and at nighttime, it was always, you know, you always look up to see if the Pope is awake. If the light's on, the Pope is awake, or he's home. But actually, they keep the light on, so you know he's home. Because when he's on pilgrimage, if he's visiting Korea or Japan or South America, whatever, then the light's not on. But the point is, you have this. It's very symbolic, very symbolic, as if to say the Church is under the watchful eye of the Holy Father, who is the Vicar of Christ. So to come in and immediately make that change was jolting for a lot of people. It was jolting for a lot of people. So I don't see that as a gesture of humility. And then other things that were done. Who am I, you know? But I'm just saying that Pope Benedict, truly the humility of Pope Benedict, but the world didn't recognize his humility. I mean, the world, many people did, of course, but the media, they didn't like him from the beginning, maybe because of his humility. They didn't like him.
It was so foreign to them.
Perhaps.
Huh? I think so.
Perhaps. But to interpret a lot of these things that Pope Francis, that he does as an authentic gestures of humility, I wouldn't suggest that. I would. Again, it's not to say he's not a humble man, but I'm just contrasting the two in a simple kind of way. You get the point that I'm making?
Yes, yeah.
So, and of course, Pope Francis, he says a lot of beautiful things, but he also says a lot of things off the cuff. And I can say that because everybody knows it.
Oh, yes.
So there's always damage control. Like, well, what did he say? What did he mean? And it's probably just he's the difference. He's kind of like your uncle down the street, you know, or the old uncle down the street, or whatever. I mean, all due respect, I really don't mean to disrespect him. I hope you don't interpret that as being disrespectful. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to point out that the humility of Pope Benedict. There was true humility there. Yeah. True humility. It's just to be very, very conscious of who you're speaking to and how you speak to them and how they understand what's being communicated. Even when you challenge, even when you call people to the necessary conversion that's needed, you know, in personal lives, in the life of a nation, in the life of the world. So anyway, so I was reading this, Pope Benedict spoke of the betrayal of Judas, when Judas betrayed Christ, saying that Judas's problem was failing to leave Christ when he no longer believed. It's a falsehood, which is a mark of the devil. And this has nothing to do with Pope Francis. I just got off on a tangent there. We're just talking about humility. But Judas, Pope Benedict said, could have left, as many of the disciples did. Indeed, he would have left if he were honest. Instead, he remained with Jesus. He didn't remain because of faith or because of love, but with a secret intention of taking vengeance on the Master. And so the Pope, Pope Benedict, said that for those Catholics who cannot bring themselves to believe the formal teachings of the Church on life and family matters, it would be more honest to leave the Church rather than to betray the Church.
Mm-hmm. Or even want to change the Church teachings to their convenience.
Well, see, that's one of the things that I've heard so often, you know, that we've got to, because some people believe they've got to change the Church. Mm-hmm. Many priests and religious, you know, during the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and even to this day, I think if we speak about the religious, because again, this idea of humility, the sister who was here, Sister Natalia, very humble, but the power that is, it's a sacred power that she emanates, right? Not a power that is arrogant. And again, that has no reference to Pope Francis. I'm almost sorry I even said that, because I don't want people to think in such a way. But there are many in religious life, in the priesthood, who, it was just the psychology of the 60s and the 70s, right? I'm okay, you're okay. And, you know, the beginning of the breeding of narcissism, mm-hmm. right? It's all about you. And, you know, it's what I want, what I need, in any case. So this Monsignor, in reflecting on these words of Pope Benedict, that it's better, best to leave, it's more honest to leave the Church if you don't believe what the Church believes. Now, at the same time, that doesn't mean that there can be, you know, for instance, when, this must be in reference to the last week's gospel, because when the disciples decided to leave, they said, this is intolerable teaching, who can accept this teaching? And they decided to walk away. Jesus just let them go, right? He had been speaking about the Eucharist. And then he turned to the 12, and he says very clearly, he says, some of you don't believe. And he said, someone, and he knew who would betray him. So as he looked at the 12, knowing that one would betray him, he said, do you wish to go as well, to the 12? And Peter said, Lord, where do we go? Now, it's interesting that he says, to whom do we go? In other words, we don't understand what you're talking about. We don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But to whom do we go? Because we've come to believe you have the words of life everlasting, and we choose to stay with you, even though we don't understand. And so this is, intellectual difficulty to have problems understanding is not disobedience. So I may not understand. So you might have teachings you find difficult to accept. Perhaps, for instance, today, the redefinition of marriage, many Catholics maybe find it difficult to accept that the Church doesn't endorse same-sex marriage. I mean, that's how far we've come as a people away from, intellectual honesty, you know, an honesty about the nature of life and the nature of the nature of man, the nature of woman, and the nature of the family, how far we've drifted away from that understanding. So they might have difficulty under it, but they nonetheless adhere to, accept, embrace the church. Does that make sense? In other words, they may have, you may have difficulty accepting a teaching, but it's virtuous to believe, taking as your own mind, as your own, the mind of the church. So you sacrifice what you believe or what you think. And you take as your own the mind of the church. As again, Peter says, well, to whom should we go? This is a hard teaching for us as well. We don't understand, but we believe you have the words of life everlasting, so we choose to stay with you, right? It's very different from saying, well, no, the church has got to change. The church is, and he points out, by the way, there are some differences. For instance, it is required for the teaching on abortion. In other words, we cannot accept abortion. But there can be legitimate differences of opinion among Catholics on how to take care of the poor.
That makes sense.
Or while the church can never ordain women as priests, there can be difference in how to ensure all are provided access to medical care. Medical care, right?
Right.
So Pope Benedict, after his exhortation, he asked God to help us to believe in Jesus, as St. Peter did, and always to be sincere with him and with all other people. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
Yes. Yeah.
Or like many of the times you talked about how the saints emphasized obedience. That's a sign of humility. Obeying and submitting.
Sure.
And like you just said, some of the people have a hard time with certain church teachings, but you must.
I think, you know, as I reflect back on my life, I would certainly say that there are things that I don't quite still understand, you know.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, I clearly understand now, but although I have to say in certain instances I grapple with certain things, especially with regards to contraception. You know, there was a long time as I went through this. Of course, that was a crazy time, too. But I just thought, well, I accept it, though. Well, this is what the church teaches. So it's a little confusing to me as to why the church doesn't permit or allow the use of contraception. Going back, you know, when I was a seminarian. And even, I think, in the earlier years of my priesthood, but I accept, okay, this is what the church teaches. Now, as I've gone through life, I understand the wisdom. It makes sense. You just look at what has happened in society, you know, the contraceptive mentality, as they say, that is given over to the free reign of the flesh. And you say, the prophetic in the encyclical Humanae Vitae, Pope Paul VI, well, yeah, it makes clear sense. Now, there are situations where it's still, I find it difficult, you know, in certain situations with certain families for reasons. But that's just an example, right? Or there's other things, certain things at certain times, you know, you grapple with these things, whatever. But this is what the church teaches. So rather than we're going to change, let's try to, as the church does, to deepen her understanding of why she teaches what she teaches. And what does she teach but what has been handed on to her, what has been given to her.
And people see it when they see the teachings. Well, how come the church is limiting us? Actually, it's freeing us because of in its wisdom, in her wisdom. There's
is in order, mm-hmm. you're bound in order to be free. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, as we speak about that, this is always so hard, I think, for society, perhaps. But first and foremost, we are sinners, mm-hmm. and we're flawed, and we have defect. And as Jesus says, before you take the speck out of your brother's eye, take the plank out of your own. So, okay, so given that fact that we are sinners and we fall short, does that mean that, well, God has to change to accommodate me, or I have to recreate or rewrite the laws of God, or recreate God in my mm-hmm. image and likeness? No, it's we look to the high standard, but it's not just looking to the high standard, but it's being in the living in conflict, living in tension, and humbly coming humbly mm-hmm. in humility and humbly coming before the Lord and to say, Lord, just take an example of forgiveness. You know, somebody says I just can't forgive him or her for what he or she did to me. I just can't forgive. It was unjust. It was wrong. It was hurtful. It caused so much. You can imagine. Mm-hmm. And I just can't forgive. You know, well. But you're not free until you forgive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and at least come before the Lord. Okay, this is the feeling is there. I just feel that I can't. So I can say, okay, I forgive, but I know that in my heart I haven't forgiven.
Because I won't. Well, I won't forgive.
Well, sometimes the healing. I mean, it's like there has to be. It has to be an act of the will. Mm-hmm. This is okay. I forgive, but Lord, I give you this heart mm-hmm. that has been hardened or has been wounded so deeply
right.
that I'm in sickness. I'm in pain,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and so we go to the divine physician mm-hmm. to begin the healing process, so that in my heart I know yeah. that I've achieved, or that I've been graced with the ability to forgive, mm-hmm. and then I find that freedom. But it has to, so it has to be. It's not that you don't want. Some people don't want.
Yeah,
sure.
But there's some people that do. I want, but I can't. I need help.
The pain.
Yeah.
The pain. I've talked to so many mm-hmm. people who for years they were suffering from lack of forgiveness, an inability to forgive. Mm-hmm. To say, yes, okay, with the head, I forgive. With the will, I forgive. But my heart's not catching up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not catching up because I'm still wallowing in this pain.
Carrying this.
And then all of a sudden, something happens, and either time heals all things, or in an instant, all of a sudden, this infusion of grace, and I find that I'm able to say, I forgive. I'm able to let go, and I'm free, and thank God.
Yeah.
Finally, at last, free. I don't know if that's even related to what we were talking about, but it's, well, it's again, it's you know, to whom do we go?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite there. I don't quite understand, but I accept. And see, the church is espoused to the Lord. So Jesus says, if you see me, you see the church. You can't separate one from the other. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll be right back and see where we're going to go. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listen Support of Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Koska is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, where you can obtain a plenary indulgence by visiting us during this year of mercy with the usual qualifications. Then, of course, there is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org, and enter into the presence of Christ.
Who am I? What does it mean to love? Why was I created? We'll address all of these great questions and more at Echo Chicago this June. Hello, I'm Dawn Fitzpatrick, Respect Life Director for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Echo Chicago is a Theology of the Body summer camp for teens and young adults. For the first time ever, the Archdiocese is partnering with Dumox Ministries to present a week of prayer, fun, and immersion in the teachings of St. Pope John Paul II. This exciting camp will take place at Benedictine University in Lisle, June 24th to the 30th. Registration is now open. Go to respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355 for more information. That's respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355. All of us feel an echo in our heart to explore God's original creation and His true purpose for us. Join us in June for Echo Chicago.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Do you want to help save unborn babies and their moms from the trauma of abortion? The Women's Centers invite you to join their team of welcoming volunteers. Their life-saving pregnancy centers help women considering abortion to choose life. They've been around for 31 years and have saved over 39,000 babies and moms from abortion. You can help in reception, prepare bottles for spare change campaigns, help clients shop free in our family room, or even do school service hours. Volunteering is Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on some Saturdays. Please call Volunteer Director Paige Scarlett at 773-794-8808. That's 773-794-8808 to get started volunteering for the Women's Centers of Greater Chicagoland.
Welcome back, everybody. That's tomorrow, September 1st.
You got it.
Wow. Hard to believe. August. Anyway, so today, Jesus, we had the gospel today. It's the Lord going to, well, it's just talking about the disciples walking away.
Mm-hmm.
What was yesterday's gospel? That was the, because we had the missionary sister, but I had written about that. Anyway, well, you can tell it's Monday. Anyway, Jesus, in the gospel today, Jesus went to Nazareth. You know, he went to Nazareth, where he was raised. It's interesting when you think about it. He was born in Bethlehem, and he had to leave Bethlehem because Herod wanted his demise, his destruction. And so they had to escape. Mary and Joseph had to take Jesus, and they went to Egypt. Then he came back, and he was raised in Nazareth. Today in the gospel, you have him going back to Nazareth as a man, and he's outright rejected there. He eventually makes his way to the holy city, to Jerusalem, and he's rejected there, even so much so that he's crucified, but they don't want him crucified within the walls of the holy city, outside the walls of the holy city. So it's, what did he say, the sparrows have nests, yes, but the foxes have lairs, but the Son of Man has nowhere to rest his head. But he went to Nazareth, and he and as according to his custom, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day. He kept the Sabbath. So people have to think about that. You know, Jesus, he kept the Sabbath. He followed the prescriptions of the law. You
know? He was obedient.
He was obedient. And he was purifying all the while. He's purifying the law. But it takes nothing from the Decalogue, from the Ten Commandments. But he stood up as he was in the synagogue. He was handed a scroll of the prophet Isaiah. He opens the scroll, and he found the passage where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring glad tidings to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, and to proclaim a year acceptable to the Lord." He rolled up the scroll, he sat down, and they were utterly amazed, utterly amazed. And they spoke highly of him. They were amazed at the gracious words that came from his mouth. And then all of a sudden they ask themselves, but who is this? Mm-hmm. Isn't this the son of Joseph? Isn't he one of our own? Isn't he from, he's our kinsfolk. He's part, he's, and at that they wanted nothing to do with him. They rejected him. They said, do here in your native place, in your own hometown, the things we hear you do in Capernaum. Because Capernaum is really where he set up his headquarters. That's where he, that's the only place in the gospel where it says he was home. When he got to Capernaum, he was home. The word got out. The word was flying about that he was home. But even there, you know, toward the end of his life, he's being rejected there as well. And he can do, but where he's, and why did he set up his home in Capernaum? From there he would go out, right? But because he knew that he was loved. The people accepted him. They wanted him. He could do much there. But in Capernaum, he could not. I was saying this morning, that, I mean, in Nazareth, he could not. It's very interesting because if we really truly exercise a prophetic office that we've all received by virtue of our baptism, then we discover, having given ourselves over to Christ, that it is a lonely walk, and it's meant to be. But we're not alone because we have each other. You know, that's why John says, I, your brother, share with you the distress and the kingdom and the endurance we have in Christ Jesus. Now, if we think that the world is going to accept us, that we're going to befriend the world, we're mistaken. You know, this is, it certainly isn't, it's not biblical. It's not part of the biblical worldview, you know. We have a mission to the world. We have to be the salt, we have to be the leaven, to be the light in the darkness. But the prophetic walk is a lonely walk. We're not going to be accepted. We're not going to be liked. We're going to be despised. We may be hated, as Jesus said. If we truly, now we don't want to be arrogant. We don't want to be, we don't want to certainly live with an aura of superiority. No, because as I said just before the break, the first thing we have to do is, and speaking of Francis, Pope Francis, when he was first asked, you know, who are you? Who is Jorge Mario Bergoglio? He said, a sinner. So there's a wonderful sense of his humility, mm-hmm. you know, that he would first and foremost identify himself as a sinner. And so we are. And there, but by the grace of God, go I. And we never forget that. We should never forget that. Otherwise, we end up like the Pharisee in the temple who says, oh, God, you thank you. I thank you, God, that I'm not like that poor publican over there, that tax collector, you know. The poor guy is prostrate. He's beating his breast, and he's saying, Lord, have mercy on me. I'm a sinner. He says, thank God I'm not like him. You know, I keep the commandments. I give to the poor. I say the right prayers. I do this. I do that. I do everything. You know, I'm
so holy.
And Jesus was there. He says, you know, this poor tax collector will be first in the kingdom of heaven before that Pharisee, because the Lord could read his heart. His heart was not in the right place. He did not have humility. Mm-hmm. He was not, you know. So we're not, you know, we're not going to befriend the world. We don't accommodate or compromise or cave into the world. We're in dialogue with the world. We have to listen to the world. We have to learn from the world, no doubt, because this is God's creation, and God isn't only the God of Catholics or the Christians, but God is the God of all people. But we have the fullness of truth, and we have to humbly receive that and pray for the authenticity of life to communicate to convey that to others. And this is where we really we mess up, you know, in a pretty bad way. I was in a letter to the teachers or to the parents and all that. I was saying, you know, as on one hand, as we're calling each other to walk down this path, you know, in the wonders and the beauty of the church, because the church is her teachings, her spirituality. This is a mystery, a beautiful mystery. It's just so beautiful to talk about being bound in order to be free, to be thrown into that mystery and to be free, to be able to breathe, mm-hmm. breathe freely. The mystery of the church, imbued with the very mystery of God, you know, reflected in so many wonderful, beautiful ways. But at the same time, we become the worst, I don't want to say use the word, we could be enemies of the church, but that's only if we're in the church. As Pope Benedict said, we're here to destroy. Mm-hmm. We're here to destroy. By the way, this is one of the things that I find most difficult about the redefinition of marriage, is that for all the activism and for all the so-called progressivism, or, you know, that accept us, we have to accept everybody and all that. If we don't accept, if we don't sanction, if we don't canonize this redefinition of marriage, all of a sudden we become these so-called hateful, bigoted people. And that's just not the case. It's not the case. It's the same thing with this Black Lives Matter. You know, well, all I, as the sheriff said mm-hmm. so beautifully, he says, let's just, you know, stop that already. All life matters. All life. White lives matter. Black lives matter. Hispanic lives matter. A policeman's life matters. Mm-hmm. The child in the womb, mm-hmm. that life matters. Life matters. So let's get over this, mm-hmm. especially when the rhetoric is hateful.
Yeah.
And is calling for this kind of a this, what was it, the pigs in the blank? Let's see, that was the chant, and I was reading about that this morning too. The Black Lives Matter, these people that were protesting, there was a chant that they were chanting, like something like take the pigs and. Make them into bacon, wrap them, something. Anyway, it was
disgusting.
It's disgusting. So life matters.
Mm-hmm.
Life matters.
Why isn't that hate speech? You know, it's always good for people to come around and say, what is hate speech? But why isn't that chant? Why isn't what that's being done hate speech? I don't understand that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we don't understand, right? I don't know. I keep saying at some point we've got to move beyond political correctness, and we've got to look at things from a rather objective point of view. The solution, as I wrote last week, the solution to the problems in the nation, in the family, in individual lives, is adhering to the laws of God and giving ourselves to the Word made flesh, Christ Jesus. That's the solution. You know, anyway, we're out of time, and I feel like I've just deviated. Anyway, the day's over. The hour is over. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll see where we go. We'll pick up where we left off, maybe, if we can figure out where we left off. Hey, thanks very much for being with us. Almighty God, bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Ciao.
Become so obscure, it does not take that.